Om Vishnu Pad, Paramahamsa, Parivraja Kacharya, Asatara Satyashri Srimad. His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Maharaj, Prabhupada Ki Jai. ISKCON Founder Acharya, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Anantakoti Vaishnava Vrinda Ki Jai. Namacharya, Srila Haridas Thakur Ki Jai. Prem Shikor, Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda, Shri Advaita Gadadhar, Shri Vasadi Gaur Bhakti Vrinda Ki Jai. Shri Shri Radha Krishna Gopinath Shai Mukunda Radha Kunda Giri Govardhana Ki Jai Vrindavan Dhamma Ki Jai Mathura Dhamma Ki Jai Navadvip Mayapur Dhamma Ki Jai Jagannath Puri Dhamma Ki Jai Gangamaya Jamuna Devi Ki Jai Bhakti Devi Ki Jai Tulsi Maharani Ki Jai Samaveda Bhakti Vrinda Ki Jai Gaura Premanande. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to Sri Guru and Gauranga, all glories to Srila Prabhupada, Nama Om Vishnupadaya, Krishna Prastaya Bhutale, Srimate Bhaktivedanta Swami Niti Namane, Namaste Sarasvati Deve, Gauravani Pracharane, Nirvasesa Sunyavadi, Paskacha Deshatarane, Vandeham Sri Guru, Sri Yuta Padakamalam, Sri Gurun Vaishnavamscha, Sri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Raganatham Vitam Stam Sajivam, Sadvaitam Sadvadutam Parijana Sahita Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padam Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishakam Vitamscha Vanchakalpa Chubhischa Kripa Sindhubhyeva Cha Patichanam Pavanevyo Vaishnavevyo Namo Namaha. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Recording in progress.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. So it is January 31st, 2023, the VIHE studying from Srimad Bhagavatam. Canto 4, Chapter 23, Text 11 to 30. So first we'd like to find out about your mission accomplished, about meditating on the situation that you're in as service and yourself as a servant and being satisfied just with the service, not wanting anything else, just the satisfaction of the service. So who would like to go first? Yes, Ambika.
Hare Krishna. So I wanted to share because this day particularly was very good for this kind of meditation, and it was very much needed and very helpful to have this meditation because it was really tight, the schedule, the whole day, since from early morning. I noticed that one of our readers in our reading group had not done recordings on time, and you know, then I realized that okay, I have to do her services as well as my own services, and this will take a lot of time from me, and that's not what I would have. But I had to, you know, collect my mind and thoughts, and I had to think that okay, what am I complaining about? I have Srimad Bhagavatam to read and wonderful devotees to serve. So I just read myself, and then all of a sudden, during the day before the noon, I got information that because my fridge was broken. So I got the information all of a sudden that they are now going to bring the new fridge and put it up there. And so I had to make some time because I have some classes before these classes and I don't really have time. But again, I had to think and I had to go deep within myself that what am I complaining about the time, because I have these services to do. Krishna needs bhoga, and Krishna certainly needs a working fridge. So yeah, it was very easy for me to, you know, get absorbed to this meditation today.
Very good. I need to stop you there, though. I need to stop you there because we have a lot of people to share. But thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you. I'm so glad it went so well for you. Thank you. So I chose a Here Comes the Sun because Hanuman is the epitome of service. So who else would like to share? We have a couple things in the chat. Oh, just somebody who's traveling. Okay. So who else would like to share? I'm sorry I had to cut you off, but as I say, I like to keep to the time. Someone else on how they really got the mood of being a servant? If you don't volunteer, I will call on you. Yes, Mahalakshmi.
Well, so I got a chance to practice this mood of what is the service I have to do and understand and just do it. And then mine is peaceful, although one might have not thought about doing such a service.
Was there something specific? Briefly.
It was not coming to class.
Oh, when I told you that you weren't allowed to come to class at midnight. Okay, very good. Very good. I'm glad you did that. All right. Let's see. Who else are we going to ask? Neelamani.
Hare Krishna Mataji.
Hare Krishna.
I don't know. I'm struggling a little bit here to just try to frame what I could position in this mission. But, you know, in one respect, I was reflecting and saying that what we have to strive to do is everything we should do, we have to frame in the mood of service, whether it's our work-related work or trying to coach and guide devotees or reading Bhagavatam, all of this, you know, if we can understand that it is really service and therefore if it is service, then we should be happy and satisfied with it. So you know, yesterday we had nice Bhagavatam association with you and the other devotees. I spent some more time with this couple that we're visiting and guiding the young lady in trying to manage and deal with the situation. And I was reflecting that, yes, you know, if you're helping someone see Krishna in whatever situation they're in, that in one essence is service. So that's
excellent.
My little bit of an offering.
That's wonderful. Mission accomplished. All right, Leela Madhuri Lalita.
Hare Krishna, Mantansi.
Hare Krishna.
As I was sharing my mission in the previous session, that I'm undergoing some pain because of some situation that's disturbed me recently. But still, I'm accepting, as you said, even the pain is Krishna. So accepting the pain also as Krishna, continue to do my services. As you said, services are important. Doesn't matter where are we and what are we, in which situation we are in. Thank you, Mataji.
Oh, beautiful. Yes, actually when you see the pain as Krishna, it's not pain anymore. Pulastamuni.
Hare Krishna, Mataji.
Hare Krishna.
This is a realization I had after years of being in Krishna consciousness. Initially, there's always a period of like self-development that obviously continues throughout the course of one's Krishna consciousness. But you get to the point where it's not enough. You have to become a facilitator. You have to become a cooperator. You know, it's like in the big scheme of things, it's no longer about yourself. It's about others, whom you meet And it doesn't matter whether the devotees or not, you know. It's like we should always be there for them. You know, we should always give the good example, and we should always leave a lasting impression on whoever we meet. So it's a big responsibility, actually. Mm. You know, it's a huge responsibility. And, you know, as I said, as the years go by, you just realize that we're meant to do something. We're meant to do something for the movement, for Krishna, for Srila Prabhupada, you know, but not just looking after ourselves.
Excellent. That's... Did you have anything in the last day or so that you really were able to apply this?
Nothing specific. A work in progress, I think.
Work in progress. Okay, I like your general realization. Excellent. Adwaita Krishna Prabhu.
Hare Krishna, Adhiji. You know how you kind of, after some years, you just want to sublimate. Means you don't want to do the nitty-gritty things. You don't want to cook, and you don't want to do the big, heavy lifting and carrying. And sometimes it becomes a bit intense. So on and off, you get that. And then said, I've done enough of that. And then it's hard to meditate on, you know, could I do some other service? So just today, I know I had a very busy day, plus have a class in the evening, and that class in the morning with you and now. But in between, someone asked me to prepare food for 50 people. So it's not something I'd like to do, but, you know, I've been a cook many years of my life. So I said to the devotees, okay, I'll try. But my mood has not been, so I really want to do this. And then I asked the devotee, please send someone to help me. So finally they sent someone, so I've just about finished cooking for 50 people. So then I was thinking, like you said, you know, you brush your teeth, you wash your clothes, you do everything is for Krishna. Then I slowly said, you know, yeah, I'd like to sit down and read and teach and preach, but it's a service. And then I realized that in Hindi, I used to always, whenever I used to give a talk about servant, be a servant, I used to use the word nokar. I don't know whether you understand nokar means what. In Hindi, it means like you're really like a menial, low-paid servant. So I tend to think, okay, well, what can I do? I'm Kinkara, you know, I'm servant. So I have to do this for Krishna. And I get nothing out of it. But it's okay, but I want to do it for Krishna because who am I to claim anything? So every time I get into a hardship work where I have to do something, I always think, I'm Nokara, I have no claim. Nokar means in Bhojpuri, in Hindi, like, you know.
Okay, but I'm hoping that you will find that it's not like, okay, I'm Nokar, I got to do this. But more like...
Yeah, it was like that in the beginning, like I was saying. Yeah, but then I tried to find some joy in doing it.
Good.
Because like I said, some years you want to sublimate. Yeah, it turned out okay. Just finished half an hour ago, so.
Oh, and you're smiling. Alrighty, here comes the sun.
Fine. It's been a busy day. Not usual busy day. It's like a double, treble busy day, but it's fine.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm happy.
Okay, thank you. Okay, Madhura Dameshwari. How'd you do with your mission accomplished?
Mataji, very sorry, Mataji. Morning Bhagavatam class. In daytime, usual normal household work. And now I went to physiotherapy. Now I came for this class. That's all, Mataji. Very sorry.
So you never worked on your mission accomplished even for 2 minutes in the last 24 hours?
Last 10 hours, Mataji.
10 hours? No, it's not been 10 hours. It's been 24 hours since I gave
I read Bhagavatam. I read slokas for exile.
But you never thought of yourself as a servant. Okay, you work on this for the next 24 hours. Shakti Manta, how did you do with your mission accomplished of meditating on service and yourself as a servant?
Hare Krishna, Mataji.
Hare Krishna.
Mine is just a general realization. So I was thinking that Krishna is all attractive. And our natural condition is that, we are attracted towards Him because we are His parts and parcels. So while going about our lives, doing many things, I thought if I could just focus on the all-attractive Krishna and do my activities not centered around me, that would give me so much satisfaction, and my search for validation would end there.
Oh, very nice. So did you actually apply this to a specific thing you were doing?
Well, I did have some service on Thursday, and because it's going to be Nityanand Trayodashi on Friday, so my service was related to that. But my service was given to someone else, so I thought it doesn't matter. Krishna has to be satisfied, and whoever can do the service better.
Oh, very nice. I'm glad you had a specific. I'm a servant, and if Krishna gives a service to someone else, like Ambika gave us all these. A lot of specificity with the refrigerator. And this was very nice. All right, here comes the sun.
I also thought that there is a point in English that goes also service stand and wait. So that was my idea.
Excellent. 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 All right, Aja.
I have been struggling with this, Mataji. So yesterday I had a busy day with Krishna conscious activities, work-related activities, and then I was supposed to do several family-related actions. But the family-related action did not happen because I didn't have time. I have some unhappy, family members. I've been wondering, how do I act as a servant in this condition and make everybody happy? I have some unhappy people.
Oh, I like this. All right, please listen, everybody. And I've said this before, even if you don't apparently accomplish your mission, if you just become aware of the difficulty, that is also an accomplishment. Right? When you're aware that, wait a minute, I don't know how to be a servant with my unhappy family members because I didn't spend time with them. I would like to humbly, so I'm going to give you credit for noticing the difficulty. Thank you. We find a lot of devotees who aren't introspective sages. They're not going through anartha nivritti, as we talked about yesterday. And they're just thinking, oh yeah, everything I'm doing is devotional service, and they don't stop and think. They're not introspective sages. They're not thinking, am I really in the mood of a servant? So what I'm going to suggest to you is that don't try to serve your family because they're your family. Because if we try to please people in this world because they're my mother, my father, my wife, my kid, and I am the good dharmic husband, father, son, brother, then I will always be disappointed. Because someone's going to, sometimes my wife will think I'm not a good husband, my mother will think I'm not a good son, my child will think I'm not a good father. That will happen 100%. 100%. I always give the example, the husband likes lasagna, so the wife makes it on Monday, and he says, thank you for the lasagna, so she cooks it on Tuesday, and he says, 2 days in a row? This is the way it is. But we can always please Krishna. We can always please Krishna, whether other people are disappointed with us or happy with us, will no longer affect us. If our goal is to please Krishna and our identity is I am a servant of Krishna. I like to think of it as a secret agent. A secret agent, you go into North Korea as a secret agent and you don't announce, hey, I'm coming in as a spy, right? You say you're something else. I'm an English teacher or whatever. I'm selling you aluminum. But actually you're there as a spy. So these Sarvapadi Vinirmuktam, I am a son, a daughter, a husband, a wife, a mother, a father, a brother, a sister, I am an aluminum salesman, these are all superficial cover identities. Actually, I work for Krishna's company, the product I sell is Krishna Prema, and everybody that I meet is either a supervisor in the Krishna Prema company, a co-worker, a customer, or a potential customer. And the other roles are a cover. And I am not really so concerned as to whether or not anybody is pleased except for the boss. I may have an unhappy customer. I may have an unhappy coworker. I may even have an unhappy supervisor, but I better have a happy company president. And if the company president knows that I did my best to please him, I should make my husband's favorite dish for him so Krishna will be pleased that I'm doing my duties, not so that my husband will be pleased. And this is Pitramarja's example. He was working as a king, not to please the citizens, not to please his family, not to please the demigods, but to please Krishna. And if the others were pleased or not pleased, his duty was to please Krishna. And when we have that mood, then we are satisfied with our own love, regardless of the consequences, and we are free. Then we can be free from happiness and distress, fame and infamy, honor, dishonor, friends and enemies. Yes. So I appreciate your bringing out the difficulty. I actually appreciate that much more than people who say, oh yeah, I'm already fully Krishna conscious. You know, because those who are fully Krishna conscious, they don't have that mood, actually. They're always interested.
So Mataji, in this situation, there is a competition always between direct Krishna conscious activities versus non-Krishna conscious activities.
No such thing. No such thing. That differentiation should not exist. There are certain activities that hamper our ability to be Krishna consciousness, like meat eating, intoxication, illicit sex, and gambling. It's pretty hard to be Krishna conscious while you're gambling. Yudhisthira was really struggling with that one. You know, it's that where those things hamper our ability to be Krishna conscious. But there is not really anything like that. Krishna consciousness is our state of consciousness, not what we're doing. It's our state of consciousness. I can be just as Krishna conscious when I'm offering arti to the deity as I can when I'm dealing with a difficult in-law. That was the mission. The mission was that everything, I see everything as servant, and I see always that I am a servant, and I find satisfaction in my service, not in the externals. All right, I need to go on to someone else again because we have to have time for also what we're doing today. So who have I not called on? Yes, Stuti Priyarana.
Hare Krishna, devotees. Hare Krishna, Mataji. Mine is almost, in sync with these devotees. First of all, I was struggling, how will I work on this? But then I'm working and it was very difficult for me in the morning to join the class today. But then somehow I tried and I skipped my japa. And I was thinking when and how will I complete that. But there was a struggle for me, but I'm a teacher actually. So I skipped the morning japa and I attended the class. And we had exam today in the school. So while supervising, I completed my japa. I got time there. And, you know, the things that generally give me frustration there and I don't like. Today it was different and I could feel the point that he just made that yes, even this is service to Krishna because he has chosen this for me.
Perfect. So it was perfect. This is exactly what Prabhupada says, that we should see Rishikesh, that he has engaged me in this particular service. Excellent. You got it. Excellent. That was how Prithu Maharaj felt running his kingdom. Goloka Vasini.
Thank you so much, Mataji. Thank you. Mataji, I remembered when I was brushing my teeth, so I was remembering that I'm doing it for the pleasure of Krishna, and because I was trying to remember that yes, every activity is for his pleasure, because generally when I do this, I am always in those activities, I am lost and I feel that what I am doing means always in a regretful mood that I have to finish it quickly, I need to go for the Mangal Arati or I need to chant or I need to do this and that means, but that was nice that because that time I could remember that yes, this is for his for the pleasure of the Lord. And then Mataji, today I realized that in the morning I heard two hours class and I chanted my 16 rounds before I went went to work. So, but generally it does not happen every day. I just only chant. I don't hear or read before I leave. So I could analyze that, yes, it is possible. I mean, if we have devotees' blessings and if I am organized, then it is possible to read also and to chant and then do our things. So Mataji, when I was leaving home, I was praying to Prabhupada yes, this is I am doing for your pleasure. Please accept this. This is my service. And then when I was coming back from the work, like home, then you said that we should be happy with our service. Generally, I feel tired. I feel like not that happiness after doing my job or service. And but today when I was coming home, I was feeling, yes, I am happy because I tried to serve and I was trying to be not all the time in service consciousness. I had other ill feelings also, other bad things also. I was, whatever the consciousness was going down during my job. And I could remember also like where I went down, where I was.
Excellent. Excellent. You noticed.
Yes,
you
Mataji.
Noticed. So, and you were able on the way back to have what Prithu said to the Kumaras, be happy, satisfied with your own service.
Yes, Mataji.
And I love what you said about brushing your teeth. How when you were saying that, I felt so much affection for you. I just felt this connection and affection. Thank you, thank you, thank you.
Thank you, Mataji. We are grateful for your classes. Thank you so much. Thanks.
Okay, let's see. Who have I not heard from yet? Ratnam, did we hear from you already? I can't remember.
No, Mataji.
I didn't think so. All right. So, how is your mission accomplished?
Mission, Mataji, actually, I slept very late last night and got up very late today. I was a bit late for the class, 15 minutes. And after that, I was thinking, but after your class today morning, that you said, whatever we do, it's not only devotional service, whatever we do, it should be the equal stream. We need to look into that. I mean, whether you brush your teeth, whether you help your child, whether you walk. But then I also thought that what Sachinandan Maharaj has in this past retreat, he said that what we do is not important. Whether we are connected to Krishna or we whatever we are doing, we should please Krishna. So that remembers me, and I was actually working on that. Then it really gave me a hope that whatever we do, we have to do wholeheartedly. We should do. That's actually I realized my day today.
Correct, wholeheartedly, everything. Even if you have to get extra sleep, do it wholeheartedly for Krishna. And I think we haven't heard, let's see, who have we not heard from? Surid Gaur, I don't think we've heard from you.
Hare Krishna, Mataji, Dhamapranam. Actually, I did not get time to...
No time to remember that you're a servant?
Just think over it.
No time to remember you're a servant. Well, no, try it again in the next... Try it again in the next 24 hours. Okay, let's go on to Shyamananda. How did you do with your mission accomplished?
I was not in the class where this mission was given, and I didn't know because I couldn't hear yet.
And you didn't get a chance to watch the video. All right, well, so...
No, sorry.
So what I suggest you do after you watch that video, get some... Any of you who didn't get a chance to do it, after you watch that video, get somebody, some accountability buddy, and do it with them. Is there anyone else that I did not yet ask? Anybody that I missed? Anybody that I missed?
Hare Krishna.
Yes.
Hare Krishna. I'm sorry, I also haven't been present at the yesterday's class on Monday, but I heard your mission today, what you said, and I can say that I didn't accomplish my mission, but I have noticed that actually all my troubles, inner troubles, are because I don't want to serve others.
Mm.
Probably this is the root.
Yes, it is absolutely the root. It is absolutely the root. All of our pain and suffering come from resistance. 100%, even physical pain. 100% of our pain and suffering come from resistance. And what are we resisting? We're resisting being a servant.
So
that's what we're
especially
resisting.
In the context of you saying about anatta nivritti and that we are holding on to our evil habits, probably this is the evil habit that I have to let
That is the ultimate. Yes. That is the ultimate. Yes, correct. You are absolutely correct. That is the ultimate manifestation of evil, is that I don't want to be a servant. Excellent. Excellent. I'm glad that you got that. Yes. And that's where all of the resentment comes from, and the bitterness, and the... Now, that doesn't mean that anything anybody asks us to do, we should do. Being a servant of Krishna also means taking care of our body and mind. All right, so we're doing today text 11 to 30. And any of you who have some of these missions that you did not get accomplished in our classes, you can please do them on your own and get an accountability buddy or write something in a journal. And that will also work. All right. First, the summary of these sections. So, Maharaj Prithu sits in Muktasana, and he gradually raises his life air to the hole in his skull. Giving up all material desire, he merged the elements comprising his body into the universal reservoirs of these elements, and then he merged each of those of the gross and subtle elements into its source. And thus situated in his original constitutional position of Krishna consciousness, he gave up his body. And then Archie, Maharaj Prithu's wife, followed her husband's path. She lay down on the forest floor. She was eating only fruits, flowers, and leaves, became frail and thin. But because of the pleasure of serving her husband, she did not feel any difficulties. And when she saw her husband had passed away, she built a fire and placed the body of her husband in it. After circumambulating the fire, she entered its flames, thinking of her husband. Thousands of the wives of the demigods, along with their husbands, glorified the queen's faithful service to her husband, by which she attained his destination, as well as the power of devotional service. All right, our mission for this class. Do we feel prepared for death? If death were to come in the next 5 minutes, would we be prepared? What would our perfect death look like? Maharaj Prithu ended up being able to have a perfect death, and Archie had a perfect death. This section is about the perfect deaths of Prithu and Archie. What would our perfect death look like? It might be more than one scenario. It might have two or three ideas for a perfect death. So why do we want to have a mission to think about our perfect death? Because our choices in life have something to do with that. It's not that whatever we do in life, our death is just some random thing. The way that we leave our body, the circumstances in which we leave our body, have a lot to do with the choices we're making in our life. So having some goal about how we would like to depart will help direct our life. So I'd like us to imagine that we're at the final part of our life, that we can look back with no regrets. There we are at the final point of our life. We're looking back with no regrets. We're looking forward with joy to the next journey and the adventure of leaving our body and leaving this world. Right. So the theme of these verses is to have a laser-like focus on spiritual life, to intentionally let go of everything else. That doesn't mean we quit our job and leave our family, but it means we let go of trying to do anything for ourselves. Letting go of even what's considered essential in this world, to try to die before dying, to be like we read the other day, how Prithu Maharaj was described both as a sannyasi and as a grihastha. All right, text 11. Tasyanaya bhagavata parikram masuda sattva manastar anusamsmaran anupurtya gnanam viraktimad abhum nishitena yena chitteda samshaya padam nijajiva kosham. By regularly discharging devotional service, Prithu Maharaj became transcendental in mind and could therefore constantly think of the lotus feet of the Lord. Because of this, he became completely detached and attained perfect knowledge by which he could transcend all doubt. Thus, he was freed from the clutches of false ego and the material conception of life. Well, that sounds pretty good. Prabhupada in the purport says that when a queen gives an audience, many maidservants follow her. And the maidservants of devotional service are material opulence, liberation, and mystic powers. Prabhupada also says a devotee by dint of his, this is from the purport, a devotee by dint of his advancement in devotional service automatically becomes detached from his material body. When the devotee's spiritual body begins to manifest, he actually enters into his activities in transcendental life. At present, we have contacted a material body, material mind, and material intelligence. But when we become free from these material conditions, our spiritual body, spiritual mind, and spiritual intelligence become manifest. In that transcendental state, a devotee attains all the benefits of karma, jnana, and yoga. And Prabhupada explains also in this purport that if we constantly think of the Lord's lotus feet, we will go above even sattva-gun. We'll go above jnana and yoga. Jnana and yoga only take us to incomplete liberation. Prabhupada also explains how Pritchard Maharaj is doing this just to set an example. He was already perfect, and we talked about that yesterday. Okay, text 12. Chinaya dir arigata tat magatir nirihas tat tat jaye chinad idam vayunena yena tavam na yoga gatibir yatir apramato yavad gadagrajat katashu ratim nakuryat. When he became completely free from the conception of bodily life, Maharaj Prithu realized Lord Krishna sitting in everyone's heart as the Paramatma. Being thus able to get all instructions from him, he gave up all other practices of yoga and jnana. He was not even interested in the perfection of the yoga and jnana systems, for he thoroughly realized that devotional service to Krishna is the ultimate goal of life, and that unless the yogis and jnanis become attracted to Krishna Katha, their illusions concerning existence can never be dispelled. So, very important point here that bhakti is eternal. We do bhakti even after liberation. But other processes, karma yoga, jnana yoga, dhyana yoga, they're all given up at a particular point. So this is his realization. Now, how does he give up his body? And again, I want us to think about how we would like to leave our body. That, again, is our mission here. So how does he leave his body? Avam Savir, as we're hearing this, let's try to be there in the forest with Prithu as he's actually doing this. Let's imagine we're there with Archie watching Prithu do this. Avam Savira Pravara Sam Yojat Atmanam Atmani Brahmabhuto Dhrem Kale Tatya Jaswam Kale Varam. In due course of time, when Pritchard Maharaj was to give up his body, he fixed his mind firmly upon the lotus feet of Krishna, and thus, completely situated on the Brahmabhuta platform, he gave up his material body. Yes. So there's a nice statement in the purport. Let's see if I can find it here. Oh, Krishna. Okay, Pritchard Maharaj at the time of... Pritchard Maharaj, by the grace of Krishna, could understand that the end of his life was near, and he became very jubilant and proceeded to completely give up his body on the Brahmabhuta stage by practicing the yoga process. It is thoroughly described in the following verses how one can voluntarily give up his body and return home back to Godhead. The yogic processes practiced by Pritchard Maharaj at the time of death accelerates the giving up of his body while one is in sound health physically and mentally. Every devotee desires to give up the body while it is sound physically and mentally. All right, well, that may not, of course, be an option for us. We may not We may not always... Mahalakshmi, Gyan is ordinary knowledge. Gyan Yoga is liberation. Gyan Yoga is realizing I'm not the body, entering Brahma-Bhuta, entering into Brahman. Not the same. Gyan and Gyan Yoga, not the same. So, what does this mean? When Prabhupada talks about every devotee's desire to give up the body while it's sound physically and mentally, again, we have our plan. And I know of many devotees whose body was falling apart at the time of death, but yet they were able to have sound mind. But even if one cannot have sound mind, my grandson who just died, they had him in an induced coma, and he had... His whole brain was injured. They said his brain injury was comprehensive. He was bleeding from his brain for about the first 3 days in the ICU. And they had him on heavy, heavy sedation and an induced coma to try to give the brain a chance to rest. So as far as the brain was concerned, he was not able to be, to our external vision, he was not able to be aware. Of course, we made sure that there was Prabhupada chanting there, that he had Tulsi beads and so forth. So that may not also be in our power, that we have even the brain working properly, the body working properly, the brain working properly. But in general, the devotees try not to put themselves in a situation where they're going to be leaving their body in such a state that they won't be able to remember. Of course, we have this... this verse from King Kulashekar that Prabhupada quotes. Prabhupada really liked this verse, that this is the desire of the devotees. Okay, text 14. Sampi japayum parshnibhyam vayum utshar ayan chanai Nabhyam kos desh vavastapya rid urya kantashir shani. When Maharishprithu practiced a particular yoga sitting posture, he blocked the door of his anus with his ankles. This is called mulabandha. Pressed his right and left calves and gradually raised his life air upward, passing it on to the circle of his navel. That's the muladhara. Up to his heart, anahata, to the throat, vasuda, and finally pushed it upward, here to the Agya chakra. So he went from the Muladhara to the Swadhisthana, to the Manipur, to the Anahata, to the Vishuddha, and to the Agya. And Prabhupada notes in the purport that although Maharishprithu had stopped all practice of mystic yoga, you remember, why is he doing this? We thought he stopped all Jnana Yoga and all Gyan Yoga. After realizing Krishna consciousness, he didn't need those anymore. But still, he took advantage of his previous practice, Prabhupada said, and immediately placed himself on the Brahma-Bhuta platform in order to accelerate his return to Godhead. I think that's interesting. The aim of this particular system of asana, known as the sitting posture for liberation or muktasana, is to attain success in Kundalini chakra and gradually raise the life from the Muladhara chakra to the Swadhisthana chakra, then to the Manipur, or the Anahata, Vishuddha, and finally to the Agya. When the yogi reaches the Agya chakra between the two eyebrows, he is able to penetrate the Brahmarendra, that's the going from the Agya here to the Sahasra chakra, the Brahmarendra, or the hole in his skull, and go to any planet he desires. And Prabhupada also in the purport says that although we have to become Brahma-Bhuta, that we can become Brahma-Bhuta through bhakti. And Prabhupada says, we don't need to feel sorry that we can't that we're not practicing Kundalini Yoga. And I don't suggest you try to practice Kundalini Yoga. I mean, if you're already an expert Kundalini Yogi, fine. But I don't suggest that you try that. Trying to practice Kundalini Yoga, if you don't know what you're doing and you're not qualified, someone I know who was an expert Kundalini Yogi, he said it's like giving a three-year-old a chainsaw. And can actually cause a lot of harm. But I would like you to remember this process that Prithu's doing and imagine him bringing the life air up through the chakras, because we're going to be talking about this in a moment in regard to our chanting. Okay, text 15. Utsapa yams chutam murjni kram en avashya nispriha Vayum Vayo Kshitokayam Tejas Tejas Yayushyat. I'm so bad at reading Sanskrit, I wouldn't do it, but Prasanta said I have to, if you're wondering why I'm doing that. In this way, Pritchard Maharaj gradually raised his air of life up to the hole in his skull. That's the Sahasra chakra. Whereupon he lost all desire for material existence. Gradually he merged his air of life with the totality of air, his body with the totality of earth, and the fire within his body with the totality of fire. What are the chakras in the body? They're centers of energy. They're centers of subtle energy that deal with different aspects of material nature. And just like the shudras are the legs of the Lord, the shudras in the universal body, they are also concerned with the mula chakra and the swadhisthana chakra. The vaishyas, who are the abdomen of the Lord, are concerned with the manipur chakra. The kshatriyas, who are the arms of the Lord, are concerned with the anahata chakra. The brahmanas, who are the head of the Lord, are concerned with the vasuda and the agya chakra in the universal body. And these are in different aspects of life on this subtle platform. Okay, in this purport to text 15, Prabhupada talks about how getting free of the material elements allows the soul to merge into the Brahman. And he says it's possible that you can go from the Brahman to Vaikuntha, but 99.9% chance, Prabhupada says, you will fall from the Brahman. Okay, text 16. Kanyakshe dravyam toye yata stanam vibhagashaha shitim ambastitat tejas yadyo vayo nabasamum. In this way, according to the different positions of the various parts of the body, Pritchard Maharaj merged the holes of his senses with the sky, his bodily liquids, such as blood and various secretions, with the totality of water, and he merged earth with water, then water with fire, fire with air, air with sky, and so on. Now, all of you should be seeing a pattern here.
Mataji, in the previous purport says, unless the living entity has information of the spiritual world and the Vaikunthas, there is 99% it will fall down. So do we have to have that understanding about Vaikuntha and the spiritual world? I mean, we have a limited understanding, information.
We have enough. We have the Bhagavatam, we have Krishna book, we have all the works of the Acharyas.
Yeah.
We definitely have enough. Of course, Krishna can also give that understanding by revelation.
Right.
Thank you. Text 17. Indriyeshu manastani tanmatreshu yato bhavan bhuta dinam yun yukrishna krishya mahat yatmani sandare. He amalgamated the mind with the senses and the senses with the sense objects according to their respective positions, and he also amalgamated the material ego with the total material energy, Mahatattva. So all of you should see that there's a certain pattern going on here. Now let's look in text 16. Here Prabhupada says, one should know the process of creation and should meditate upon the creative process inversely and thus become free from material contamination. So what I hope you all noticed was that's exactly what Maharaj Prithu was doing. The process of creation. Right, first there's sound, from sound there's ether, from ether there's form, from form there's air. He's doing this backwards. Now how are we going to do that? That's indicated in text 17. And don't know if I can find it exactly. Okay, here we go. Where Prabhupada says, the sound vibration from the spiritual sky can automatically cleanse all material contaminations. Just as life in this material world has its beginning in material sound, similarly, a spiritual life has its beginning in this spiritual sound vibration. So I'm going to go through something very quickly that I usually, I have about an hour and a half class on this. And so this is just a little taster. And I learned about this from Bhaktivigyan Maharaj, and he has five classes of 2 hours each on this topic called Liberation by Sound. Also, if you want to go to ISKCON Desire Tree and look up my classes on attentive chanting and liberation through sound, you will find the whole class. Okay. So this is what we're going to be looking at, how chanting the Hare Krishna mantra reverses the process of creation. So the process of creation, as explained in the 11th canto, starts with Paravak, the voice of the soul, saying, I want to try to be an independent enjoyer. This then manifests the material intelligence, which is the voice of desire, Ichashakti, called the Pasyanti Vak. Before you do anything, you want to have a vision. This is our vision, what we want to enjoy. That manifests the voice of the mind, the Majjhima Vak, which then manifests the gross body and gross sound, Vaikari Vak. Each of these are related to also to different chakras. And it's explained in the 11th canto how the Lord creates the material world by entering into the Mula Chakra of Lord Brahma, gradually rising up through the chakras and coming out as the voice of Lord Brahma, which creates the world. And each of us has created our own individual material life in this way. The way we can reverse the creation through the chanting of the Hare Krishna mantra is, in the beginning, our chanting tends to be on the Vaikari Vak platform. It tends to be just with the mouth. We're just doing mouth chanting. Our mind is someplace else, our intelligence is someplace else, and the soul is certainly someplace else. By chanting with the mind, with the mouth, we should gradually involve the mind. Just like I was reading the other day, where Prabhupada says when we're chanting, we should remember Krishna and Krishna's pastimes. That then ignites the desire, the Ichashakti, and then we are chanting with the intelligence. Where we're chanting now with the mouth, the mind, and the intelligence, we're actually desiring to serve Krishna with our intelligence. And that wakes up the ultimate voice of the soul, the Paravak, which then has this mood of, I want to be a servant, instead of trying to be a master. And in this way, we reverse the process of creation in our chanting of the Hare Krishna mantra. I do not have time to discuss this today. I'm sure you have a lot of questions, and therefore I can simply refer you to my other classes on this topic. All right. And as I said, Bhaktivigyan Maharaj, if you want to go really in-depth, I have about an hour and a half class on the topic. If you really want to go in-depth, he has 10 hours of classes on the topic, which are far better than anything that I've ever taught. Okay, text 18. Tam sarva guna vinasam jive mayam aye nyadyat tams chanusyam atmastan as vanus ayipumam jnana vairagya virena swarupasto jahat prabhu. Pritchard Maharaj then offered the total designation of the living entity. So he's already done everything with all the material, subtle and gross elements. The total designation of the living entity under the supreme controller of illusory energy, being released from all the designations by which the living entity became entrapped, he became free by knowledge and renunciation and by the spiritual force of his devotional service. In this way, being situated in his original constitution of Krishna consciousness, he gave up his body as a Prabhu, or controller of the senses. And Prabhupada in the purport talks about that understanding our spiritual position means to understand our position in one of the five rasas to understand our position as a servant, a friend, a parent, or the lover of Krishna. All right, so we can just imagine Archie looking at all of this, and I wonder how much he sees. Does she just see her husband sitting in Muktasan and all of this is going on internally, and she's not really aware of what's going on? Or is she able to understand his processes? I would imagine that Archie also has a lot of training in Gyan Yoga and in Dhyan Yoga as well as in Bhakti Yoga. And maybe she was able to sense what he was doing. So I know people who are adept in this kind of yoga, and they're able, when they're with somebody else, to see what's going on in their chakras and see what's going on in their consciousness. So she may very well, probably, was actually deeply aware of this process that he was doing. All right, we're going to do a little exercise on this, but first let's take our stretch break. We've had an hour of sitting. Oh, look far away from the screen and stretch up. Stretch your legs, stretch your arms. Turn around. Woo! All right. There we go. Get the blood pumping out of your seat, folks. Come on, stand up. Stand up. Don't just stretch in your seat. Come on, stand up. Stand up. Come on. We can take 1 minute. This body belongs to Krishna, folks. It's not ours. Gotta take care of it, everybody. All right. Look away from the screen. Look at a distance. Rest your eyes. Let's sit back down. All right. Not my body. Gotta keep it moving. Okay. So, I'd like you all to have something to write on, something to write with, or it can be your phone, that's also fine, phone, paper, something to write on, something to write with, and we're going to give you, how much time should we give you? Let's see. We'll give you 5 minutes. I'd like you to write a paragraph about the passing of Prithu without looking at the Bhagavatam. No looking at the Bhagavatam. From memory, write a paragraph about the passing of Prithu starting now.
Recording in progress.
All right. Now we're going on to another section. Somebody's not muted. All right. So going on to text 19. So now Prithu's gone. And now Archie's going to go. The name of the seminar is Liberation Through Sound. I also sometimes, Liberation Through Sound by Bhaktivedanta Maharaj. And I probably also call it that. I may also call it Attentive Chanting, Liberation Through Sound. Okay, text 19. Archir Nama Maharajni Tatpat Nanugata Vanam Sukumar Yatad Arhacha Yatpabhyam Sparshanad Bhuvaha. The queen, the wife of Prithviraj, whose name was Archie, followed her husband into the forest. Since she was a queen, her body was very delicate. Although she did not deserve to live in the forest, she voluntarily touched her lotus feet to the ground. Prabhupada says here in this purport, she never experienced walking on the ground, for queens used to never come out of the palace. All right, that doesn't mean that she was always inside. So a palace was not just a building. Palaces had courtyards and gardens. It meant she never walked barefoot on the ground, and it meant that she was never like just out in the public walking around in the street. And Prabhupada writes of hundreds of examples of such queens like Sita Devi and Gandhari. All right, going to text 20. Again, let's try to picture this. This queen who'd always been in a palace, never gone around barefoot outside. I'm sure she wanted to, she could have. But she's walking on the in the forest. Her husband's in trance. Ataiva bhartur vrata dharma nishtaya shushrushaya charsha de hayatraya navindatar tim padikarshitapsisa prayashkara sparshana mana nivriti. Although she was not accustomed to such difficulties, Queen Archie followed her husband in the regulative principles of living in the forest like great sages. She lay down on the ground and ate only fruits, flowers, and leaves. And because she was not fit for these activities, she became frail and thin. Yet because of the pleasure she derived in serving her husband, she did not feel any difficulty. So this is the concept of the pleasure of service. The pleasure of service. Again, being satisfied with our own service, regardless of the externals, regardless of the reciprocation. I don't think she was getting much reciprocation from her husband. He was in trance. Prabhupada talks about in the purport how the wife serves the husband in grihastha life and vanaprastha life, but not sannyas life. We talked about this yesterday in our second class about the varieties of vanaprastha life. So sometimes in vanaprastha life, the husband and wife are together, sometimes they're not together, sometimes they're been sometimes together and sometimes apart. But the wife, the husband and wife certainly can be together in vanaprastha life. They don't have to be, but they can be, whereas not in sannyas life. The Prabhupada also says in this purport, it's not good to be fat in spiritual life. Okay, text 21. Now, so that was just two verses describing Archie's life in the forest before her husband dies, as she's there with him in the forest. So she's there with him in the forest. She's also doing these austerities with her husband, and she's feeling so happy to be doing this service, even though she didn't, in one sense, have any kind of physical preparation for this. She had a mental preparation of the mood of a servant, but she never had any physical experience of living austerely like this. But still, she was very happy. She wasn't in a mood of complaining. So now she's able to understand that he's died. So we have two verses about her life in the forest, and now these two verses about her death. Deham vipan akila chetanadikam patyu prativya dayitasya chatmana alakshya kinchit cha vilapyasa sati chittam ataro payad adrisanuni. When Queen Archie saw that her husband, who had been so merciful to her and the earth, no longer showed symptoms of life, she lamented for a little while and then built a fiery pyre on top of a hill and placed the body of her husband on it. And Prabhupada talks about how she can understand that the soul is eternal, that although her husband's body was dead, that he had left the body. And as a great lady, she could lament and attend to her duties. I mean, I've had unfortunately, some experience in the last week of lamenting and attending to one's duties. You know, people have asked me, I've learned, don't ever ask someone whose near loved one has died how they are doing. It is an impossible to answer question. And it actually just makes you feel very uncomfortable. You feel like if you say, well, I'm doing fine, they're going to think, what's wrong with you? And if you say, I'm crying all the time, they're going to think, well, you're, what's wrong with you? You know, but it's not like that. One is lamenting, and yet one has to attend to one's duties. Both things. We still have to brush our teeth. We still have to eat. We still have to sleep. We may have other people in our life that we have to take care of. We still have to attend to our duties. At the same time, we're lamenting. And sometimes the lamentation overcomes the duties, and sometimes the duties overcomes the lamentation, and sometimes it's together. And people talk about philosophy and lamentation. Sometimes we're fixed in philosophy, sometimes we're just lamenting. But even when we're lamenting, we don't forget the philosophy. And even when we're fixed in the philosophy, we don't forget the person that we love who's died. It's a mixture. I think of it like some kind of a khichdi or a vegetable soup or something. You know, there's all the elements are there. One understands the soul is eternal, but still one is lamenting that I'm not with this person anymore. One understands that Krishna is in control and everything that Krishna has done is good, and yet we still have emotions that we miss the person. And sometimes our missing the person is all that we're doing, and sometimes being philosophical is all that we're doing. But usually there's some mixture and some moving between them and some up and down, and it's a complex situation. And so Queen Archie is experiencing this kind of complexity. And she's able to do all of these things. Okay. And you write, Ekanta writes, it's difficult to understand this practice of entering the fire. Is it possible the woman left her body before burning into it? No, she entered into the fire alive. She entered into the fire alive. She was burning alive. Let's go on, and then we'll discuss it. Let's also read text 22. Vidhaya kritcham radini jalaputa datvo dekam bartur udara karmana natva javi stams tridasams tripaditya Viveshavanim Jayati Bratur Pado. After this, the queen executed the necessary funerary functions and offered oblations of water. After bathing in the river, she offered obeisances to various demigods situated in the sky in the different planetary systems. She then circumnavigated the fire, and while thinking of the lotus feet of her husband, entered its flames. And Prabhupada talks here about the Sati rite. So, this is a bona fide form of suicide. Generally, if a person commits suicide, it's a great punishment to intentionally destroy a body that belongs to Krishna. Like Mahaprabhu told to Sanatana Goswami, you can't destroy someone else's property. And so one is punished by being without a body for a very, very, very long time. And then when one goes back into a body, one has to learn again the same lessons that one tried to run away from by committing suicide. The lessons don't go away. So suicide is a horrific thing. But there are certain types of suicide that are glorious. Elsewhere it's said in the Bhagavatam, I think in the 7th canto, about vanaprastha life, that if one is unable to do any service, that one can voluntarily fast from food and water and give up one's body in that way. And here we see entering into the fire and burning alive. So I had a good devotee friend who worked in a burn unit of a hospital, and she was saying that a death by being burnt alive is one of the most painful and horrible ways possibly that one could die. So Prabhupada said that this was observed only by a woman who felt the separation of her husband to be more burning than fire. I should also note that it is possible, Prabhupada says this in Teachings of Lord Kapila, I think it was page 115 in the copy I had years ago, that a person can put their mind in such a way that they're not disturbed even by the pain of a surgical operation. This process of yoga, of detachment, it is entirely possible that one becomes so indifferent to the body that one does not experience bodily pain as bodily pain. I've had personal experience with this, and I know that it is possible, actually it is possible, even for an ordinary person to do this, to learn this art, how not to experience ordinarily painful sensations as pain. Okay. Why was she thinking of the lotus feet of her husband instead of Krishna? Well, first of all, her husband was a Shaktivesh avatar, so thinking of the lotus feet of her husband was as good as thinking of the lotus feet of Krishna. Second of all, Prabhupada says that if we're meditating on the pure devotees as pure devotees, that is as good as meditating on Krishna. Now, if one's meditating on pure devotees independently, if one's meditating on a pure devotee thinking, he's my husband, he's my husband, he's my husband, that's another problem, and we're going to get to that later on in this chapter. It's like if you're worshipping the demigods as a separate god, that's a problem. If you're worshipping the demigods as devotees, that's fine. So if we're thinking of the devotees, if we're thinking about Lalita, if we're thinking about Vishakha, Vrindadevi, Subal, Sridham, Nandamaraj, we'll go and be with them. Yeah? That is actually in the process of Raghunuga Bhakti. One thinks of Krishna surrounded by the devotees who have a similar mood. But anyway, her husband was an incarnation of God, so she gets a good deal. Most of us don't get such a good deal. Okay? You may have a great husband, but he's probably not God. I don't know. Maybe he's God, but I don't think so. So, that's not going to work. Yeah. Exactly. All right. Again, I want you to have... Where's my pen? Something to write on. It can be a phone. That's fine. Ta-da! Right? And I want you to write down Archie's feelings when she entered the fire and her thoughts when she entered the fire. Feelings and thoughts. And we'll take again 5 minutes. Okay, I'd like to have just maybe one or two people suggest, how would we explain the sati rite to non-devotees? Some suggestion? Anybody who'd like to make a suggestion how we could, if somebody picks up Prabhupada's books and they read it and they're like, how do you explain this? Anybody?
It is not in this yuga, it is in Shati Yuga.
Oh, no, that's not going to work. Not going to work. Sorry. You know why that's not going to work? Let's just take a look back. Look at this. Look right there in that purport for text 22. Good try. Nope. Somebody else would like to try.
So this is a totally voluntary process.
Okay.
Wherein a chaste wife, who is always engaged in serving her husband, and this is in this process allows that she can enter the fire at the same time as, you know, as her husband, and she gets the same destination. It's a very daresome process, but some daring and very dedicated chaste wives have performed this. But there was a time in India when people started forcing women, and that's when this was abolished.
Okay, I like that explanation. There's a good friend of mine. Her name is Krishna Priya. She's only about 2 feet high, if any of you have met her, from Rajasthan. She's an expert artist, an expert poet, expert cook. And she was telling me how her parents had a very loving, close marriage, and how her father died in a car accident. And immediately after the funeral, her mother basically got in her bed and never left. And a year later, just died, that she couldn't bear to function without her husband. So, and Krishnapriya was telling me that she's very rarely experienced any couple that had that kind of love. So this was something for, and frankly, I mean, everyone thinks it's romantic, like when, you know, the husband dies and 2 minutes later the wife dies, or the wife dies and 2 minutes later the husband dies, and they die holding hands, and people put videos up about it and memes about it, and that's really what this was. But yes, not something to be forced. Okay, I thought your explanation was very good. Always be careful of the other yuga explanation. Sometimes those other yuga explanations are true, but not always. So one wants to be careful. I don't have time for another one, Madhurya. Dameshwari, I'm sorry. So going on to text 23. So here we're going to another section. This is the Devatas praising Archie. Now, it interests me that they're not praising Prithu. They're praising Archie. So that's of interest. Okay. Vilok yanu gatam sadvim prithum vira varam patim tustu vur varada devar deva patnya sahasrashaha. After observing this brave act performed by the chaste lady Archie, the wife of the great king Prithu, many thousands of the wives of the demigods, along with their husbands, offered prayers to the queen, for they were very much satisfied. Okay, so let's again imagine this scene that Archie has done the funeral rites, and she's entered into the fire, and the demigods are there in the sky. Kurvatya kushim asaram tasmin mandaras sanuni nan datsvarama turyeshu grinanti sma parasparam. At that time, the demigods were situated at the top of Mandara Hill, and all their wives began to shower flowers on the funeral pyre and began to talk amongst themselves as follows. Devya uchahu aho iyam vadur dhanya ya chaivam bhu bhujam patim sarvatmana patim beje yanesham Shrir Vadu Iva, the wives of the demigods, said, "All glories to Queen Archie. We can see that this queen of the great king Prithu, the emperor of all the kings of the world, has served her husband with mind, speech, and body, exactly like the goddess of fortune serves the supreme personality of Godhead, Yagnesha, or Vishnu." So she did better. She was on earth, but she did better than the demigods. All right. Prabhupada, in this purport, blasts divorce. He said we should abolish this artificial law known as divorce. The husband and wife should live in Krishna consciousness and follow in the footsteps of Lakshmi Narayan or Krishna Rukmini. In this way, peace and harmony can be possible in the world. So, of course, there's been a lot of harm from divorce. Children being raised without their proper parents. There is a huge amount of research that shows that one of the best ways to prevent crime is to have children be raised by their biological parents in a loving family who are practicing religion. I mean, the research, I posted something about this within the last month or two on Facebook. The research is huge. If you want to prevent crime, have children raised by their natural parents who are married to each other, not just living with each other, who love each other, care for each other, and practice religion. All right, might there be some, you know, in former times, Prabhupada writes about Chaitanya Charitamrita in regard to Amoga and his wife, that if a husband has fallen, that the husband and wife can separate. So even in ancient times, I'm sure there were some times when the husband and wife didn't live together because of something. Mental illness, maybe violence. Under what circumstances would we say, I'd like you to suggest in the chat, under what circumstances would you say that we would say, go get a divorce? Don't just separate, but actually get legally divorced. Could someone suggest some circumstances, please, in the chat? Physical abuse, if it can't be solved. Physical abuse can be solved, my dear friends, if the victim goes to the police the first or second time and the person gets counseling. However, if it's gone on for years and years, often one has to remove themselves because there's a danger, and the only way to be protected is legally. When the other person has a relationship with another and wants to remarry, yes, but that kind of thing shouldn't be tolerated in society. When the partners have started to live with someone else, yes, but that should not be tolerated in society. Mental abuse, yes, but that's hard to prove. If the character is bad, be a lot more specific than that. If the couple's not able to get along, there's abuse, if there's no financial support, if they're not divorced, maybe. If there's actually if there's physical danger, then I'd say yes. What other circumstance would we say, even by Shastra, there should be actually divorce? When the legal protection of divorce is necessary. No, I wouldn't say that. We always have a chance for Krishna consciousness. Krishna consciousness is up to us. No one can be prevented from being Krishna conscious. Not possible. Sorry. No one can control our consciousness. So I'd say the main reason, if there's some kind of violence, that somebody's in danger, physical violence or sexual violence. So I had somebody contact me some time ago, you know, I found out my husband was sexually molesting my daughter, but people are telling me not to divorce. And I said, that's what the divorce law is for. That's what it's for. He said, you need your daughter protected from her father. You need to be protected. That's what it's for. You know, if you have a spouse who's violent and you're actually in danger and there's no counseling that works, forced to serve non-veg, forced like at gunpoint, then we're talking about violence. So I'm not sure what force means. Like, again, is there physical violence? Is the wife saying to the husband, I'm going to shoot your mother if you don't serve me meat? I mean, what do we mean by force? We always have a choice. I mean, if someone says, I'm going to kill your mother unless you serve me meat, then probably we need a legal divorce, because then we're dealing with violence. All right. Anyway, the point I wanted to make is there are some circumstances where the legal protection of divorce is actually necessary for people's protection. Okay. 226. Shaishanunam vrajat yodram anuvanyam patim sati pasyat ashmin atityar chir dur vibhavyena karmana. The wise, the demigods continued, just see how this chaste lady Archie, by dint of her inconceivable pious activities, is still following her husband upward as far as we can see. So in this purport, Srila Prabhupada is using hermeneutics to show that they're going upward. The demigods have to look up. That means they're not going to the heavenly planets. They're not going to the heavenly planets. They're going above the heavenly planets. Right? So their destination, both literally and metaphorically, was above. They had spiritual bodies. Prabhupada also in this purport talks about how they remain as individuals. Prabhupada also talks about in this purport how if a woman's husband is a pure devotee and she follows him, she can get his same destination, which is true in general for following a pure devotee, not just a husband who's a pure devotee. Okay, 27. This is the glories of the human form. Prabhupada is trying to have us take our human life seriously. Tesham dura pamkim twanyam marchanam bhagavat padam bhuvi lola yusho ye vai naishkarmyam sadayantuta. I had a god sister named Naishkarmi. In this material world, every human being has a short span of life, but those who are engaged in devotional service go back home, back to Godhead, for they are actually on the path of liberation. For such persons, there is nothing which is not available. From the purport, Prabhupada talks about that the demigods felt they were not as fortunate, and that we can fall from the Brahman, what to speak of the heavenly planets. Now, yesterday we were talking about humility and how humility doesn't mean hating the self. Humility means loving the self. Right? It's the demons who hate the self. So here we're going to be, and I said we would be studying that later, and here it is. Savanchicho bat atmadruk means to hate yourself, to be envious of yourself. Kritrena mahata bhuvi labdva pavar gyam manusyam vishayeshu visajite. Any person who engages himself within this material world in performing activities that necessitate great struggle, and who, after obtaining a human form of life, which is a chance to attain liberation from miseries, undertakes the difficult tasks of fruitive activities, must be considered to be cheated and envious of his own self. Let's think about this word, fruitive activities. So we have here Vishayeshu. This word fruitive activities is really interesting. What does this mean? Fruitive activities. Some thoughts? What does that mean? Fruitive activities. Mahalakshmi.
Acting with the end to get the result or the fruit. Not acting to please anyone, just I want this, so I'm acting because I want the result. I want the fruit of my action for my own.
Okay, but let's say that I'm trying to make my children happy. Is that not fruitive?
This is my duty as a mother.
Could it be fruitive?
Could it be fruit? Yes, if I would want them to be happy, to make me happy.
Or if I want to think, I'm such a good mother.
Oh, yes, or for prestige also.
Or just for my own, you know. I'm making my children happy so I can have the abhiman of I'm a good mother.
Yes.
That's it. Okay. Pulastamuni, what is fruit of activities?
Could be something that can give good or bad results depending how you perform them. So you can have a good result or a bad result. It all depends upon the knowledge you have in terms of like how you perform that type of activity. So the fruit can be good or bad.
Okay. All right, Ajay, your thoughts. What are fruit of activities?
So, as Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, the results of all work should be offered to him. But if I am enjoying the results myself, from my senses, sense pleasure, then becomes fruitive right there.
This reminds me of our talk about the servant mood, doesn't it? Yeah?
Very nice.
Yeah, it's just similar, isn't it? Right? The servant mood is I'm doing this to make Krishna happy. Whether other people are happy, whether I get something. And the fruit of activities are I'm looking for something else other than Krishna's pleasure. Isn't it? I think that's what it is. Yeah?
Yeah.
Does anybody have some thoughts about this Atmadruk, being envious of herself? What in the world does this mean? How do you envy yourself?
Whoa,
yeah, and some thoughts about this? Someone who hasn't said something?
Envious of Krishna results to envious of yourself.
Yeah, because we're part of Krishna. But can someone explain to me what does this mean? What does it mean? Shyamananda, yes. What do you think this means, to be envious of ourselves? We'll take Shyamananda first, and then we'll come to you.
Yeah, because actually I am a servant of Krishna, and if I means my material self is envious of my spiritual position as a servant of Krishna, that means I could be happy as a servant of Krishna, and as a materialist I'm just envious and won't let my actual self serve Krishna and be happy.
That is such a beautiful, beautiful answer. Sruti Priyarada, you had some insight on this. What does it mean to be envious of ourselves?
I just wanted to say, envious of being oneself means, is it Atmaha,
Atmadruk, but Atmaha is related, yes.
When we are stopping our own journey towards spiritual progress, and we are not letting, our soul, ourselves to move to that side, whereas we are stopping ourselves, engaging ourselves in sense gratification, called here as fruitive activities.
Yes. So imagine that you've got a group of people and they have an opportunity to have everything they've ever wanted. Everything. And they just turn around and walk away. So that's the condemnation of what's vishaya, or fruit of activities, that's actually opposed to the self. We're servants. You know, most of us don't want to be servants. What parent says to their kid, I hope you grow up and become a servant? Nobody says that. They don't say, I hope you grow up and, you know, become a IT specialist and doctor and a lawyer. Nobody says, grow up and be a servant. Oh, how's your son doing? Oh, you know, he's sweeping the streets. I mean, it's like when I joined the Hare Krishna movement and my mother didn't want to tell anybody that I was basically a panhandler. You know, what was I doing? I'm out on the streets selling, you know. How's your daughter doing? Oh, she's selling Hindu books in the New York subways, you know, like some panhandler. She was so embarrassed. So we hate that we're servants. We hate our insignificance. And to do activities that are opposed to our real nature is being condemned. So the demigods are saying, hey, you human beings, you've got a really good opportunity. You've really got an opportunity. And you're messing it up, doing the opposite. What fools and idiots you are. Right? Okay. Finishing up this section. Text 29. Maitreya Uvacha. Stutvat ish vamara strishu. Pati lokam gata varun yava atma vidam durvo vainya prap achutashraya. The great sage Maitreya continued speaking, my dear Vudara, when the wives of the denizens of heaven were thus talking amongst themselves, Queen Archie reached the planet which her husband Maharaj Prithu, the topmost self-realized soul, had attained. And Prabhupada writes in the purport, in the ultimate issue, there's actually, and this we've run into, I don't know if I can find this, yes, in the very end of this purport, and this is, what, the fourth time Prabhupada said that in this chapters we're studying. In the ultimate issue, there is actually no material world. But when one forgets the service of the Lord and engages himself in the service of his senses, he is said to be living in the material world. Profound. All right, Prabhupada talks here about Vaikuntha, and he also says that sometimes when a wife and a husband die together, they go to Patiloka. So I thought that was really funny. There's actually a planet, you know, that if you're really into being married to somebody, you get to go be there. I wonder what that planet's like, you know? Like there's a whole planet of these married couples that are just really into being married to each other. It's a whole planet like that. Just imagine what that must be like. Oh, we're such faithful, dharmic, in love spouses, you know? That's like the whole, there's a planet for people like that. Imagine that. There's a planet for everybody. So Archie and Prithu didn't go to this Patiloka. Like there's a Pitraloka where people who are really into their family, they get to go hang out with their whole extended family, right? That's what some of these Christians think that heaven is like. You get to be at a big family reunion forever. Of course, it's not actually forever. And other people, they just want to be with their spouse forever. I don't think that's attractive to everybody. I mean, if you went to everybody and said you could live for 10,000 years with your spouse, I don't know if everybody would be on board with that. Like the Mormons say that if you have your wedding in their temple, you're married to the person eternally. I've always wondered how many people regret getting married in the temple. Like, you know, okay, you're all right, but I don't know if I want to be with you for the rest of eternity as your spouse. Anyway, there's a place where people who are really into that, they get to have their own planet for that. But that's not where Archie and Prithu were going. Okay. Text 30. I'm giving a class for the next 3 minutes. If you want to just come in and hang out and wait for me, you can do that.
I know, I'll come back.
Well, just come in. Just come in and sit down. I mean, literally, I've got like 3 minutes left. Just come in, have a seat, and chill for a minute. Itam Bhutanu Bhavosto Pritusa Bhagavatma Kriti Tam Tascharitam Udam Achari Tasyate. Maitreya continued, the greatest of all devotees, Maharaj Prithu, was very powerful, and his character was liberal, magnificent, and magnanimous. Thus, I have described him as far as possible. All right. And here Prabhupada talks about the word Bhagavan being used sometimes for the devotees. All right, so if you've thought about your mission during this class, so your mission is to write down, think about and write down your ideal death. You might have more than one. You might have more than one scenario. I'm not necessarily going to ask you to read those, but I will ask whether or not you've done it, and I will ask about how you felt about doing that. And I want to show you something that represents my ideal death. I could not get with English subtitles, so it's in French. Sorry that it's in French. And what he says is, his last words is God is ready to open his heart to us, to establish us in him to eternal bliss. Thank you, my Lord. So that's his last words.
Tant que vous n'aurez pas eu cette grâce de comprendre jusqu'où le Seigneur nous...
Tomorrow's class is wonderful. Tomorrow's class is all the benedictions that we get from meditating on Prithu Maharaj. Bhagavatam is full of benedictions, but the Prithu Maharaj story, I'm pretty sure, has more benedictory verses than any others. See you again. See you in 22 hours, Krishna willing. Thank you very much. Anything good here is from Srila Prabhupada. Anything bad is mine. Please take the good and excuse the bad. Hare Krishna.
Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you very much.